The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace.
Enroll Alabama is a project of AIDS Alabama. For more information, visit the website AIDSAlabama.org. Welcome to the Healthy Alabama podcast, another episode, a new episode sponsored by Enroll Alabama, which is a project of AIDS Alabama. And produced in partnership with Praise 90.1 FM WJOU. I'm David Person. This season, I've been getting in these great interviews with people that I've known for most of my life. And I have this privilege once again of having one of my longtime college friends, cancer survivor, and I would have to add to that now social media activist Steve Claiborne in the studio with me. What's up, man?
Hey, I never thought of it like that, but yeah, I guess I am a Facebook activist.
Oh, without question. Yeah. And that's what we're going to get into today. Because Steve, as I said, is a cancer survivor, and he took, I think, what was even still today, the unusual route of chronicling his journey in detail on social media, which was, I think, very probably cathartic for you, I would assume, and I think was somewhat cathartic for many of us who've known you for years, because we were able to really know on a daily basis what was going on with you. Was it indeed cathartic for you?
Yeah, that and insightful from the standpoint, whenever you post something, you're always going to get feedback.
Yeah.
And so I'm a believer in the idea that it's our friends and family that kind of keep us balanced, going too far from, one direction or the other, mm-hmm. and can aid if we allow it in our mental health. And I think it's really important, or I thought it was really important during the battle, to have or try to maintain as best as possible a positive mental health attitude dealing with the stuff I had to deal with.
So let's go ahead and discuss that for a moment, because that's ultimately, I guess, the reason why we're here. You survived what form of cancer?
Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It was diffused B-cell. Moderately aggressive, curable, and I'll say that in quotation marks. It's treatable. It's one of the more treatable cancers. That's what I'll say.
Okay.
I was diagnosed in October of 2016 after feeling some, I thought they were cysts. I really did. I felt three cysts in my abdomen, and I was thinking, okay, well, I need to go to the doctor. They will probably feel them, come up with some treatment plan to remove them, and you know, life goes on. When I went to my primary physician, actually I was going for something else. So I was having some digestive issues, having problems processing food, that kind of thing. So I was thinking it might be related or whatever. And I asked him to feel the what I thought were cysts or masses. And it was interesting. Doctors try to have a poker face, you know, they try to be kind of indifferent, not whatever, but as he was feeling these masses, I saw a flash of concern and fear. It was like instantaneous, but it was there. Then that kind of worried me, but he said, okay, we need to get a biopsy because this might be something serious. So he sent me that day for a biopsy, and he said, we'll call you with the results. And he called, went to the biopsy. Later afternoon, he said, you have lymphoma. We need to link you to a oncologist. We need to get started on treatment. So what I thought were cysts were really enlarged lymph nodes. And just to give you an idea, a lymph node usually is about the size of a grape. The lymph nodes that I felt in my abdomen, two of them were the size of, one of them was the size of about a sandwich, if you could imagine that.
Wow. So maybe we're talking maybe 2 to 3 inches
more than that.
Square.
By four inches on one side, 5 inches on the other. Like okay. 4 inches wide, 5 inches high.
Okay.
Another one was probably 3.5 by 4 or 5. And then there was a smaller one in the middle of my abdomen, which was about, 4 by 4, I guess. Those were the ones I could feel. So we made the oncology appointment, saw the oncologist. He was concerned and basically said, you don't have a lot of time to decide what you're going to do, because if this is left untreated, you'll be dead in months. That's what he said. So he wanted to do a bone marrow biopsy, there's a test that they do for your heart to see if you're able to withstand treatment, an echocardiogram or something like that.
Okay.
And also a PET scan to see how extensive the cancer was. Bone marrow to make sure it wasn't in my marrow, and the PET scan to make sure it wasn't in my brain. So
to make sure it hadn't metastasized, in other words, right? Because that's metastasizing.
Well, yeah, or had right? spread. Yeah, but when, the results of the PET scan showed that the cancer was below and above my diaphragm. So besides the three masses that I felt, there was also a mass on my spleen.
Now, let me just interrupt you for a minute, because again, I'm going back to this sandwich size mass.
Yeah.
But
it was like filled with liquid, so it was
right.
It almost felt like I thought it was digestional. I thought it was like something in my intestines
that just hadn't really digested or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, because I couldn't move it around.
But you just so one day you just noticed it. It just seemed to come from nowhere.
No, it wasn't one day. It was progressive. It was one day when I finally felt to see what was going on, because I was laying on my back. So my abdomen was depressed, so I could actually feel. And it was then that I noticed, I had some other symptoms, some other things. And one of the things I was ignoring, because I'm over 50, so I'm thinking, I don't have the energy that I used to have, that kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot
and
of us
so,
over 50.
Right.
Yeah.
But fatigue is one of the first symptoms of cancer.
Didn't know that. Wow.
So
okay.
When I felt it, I was like, maybe this is undigested food. I didn't know exactly what it was, but it never crossed my mind that it was cancer. Mm-hmm. Never. It never crossed my mind. So the PET scan showed masses below or enlarged lymph nodes below and above my diaphragm and going at my chest.
So the thing that's clear to me is that you discovered fairly quickly after realizing that you had some abnormalities in your body, that you had a very serious condition. Your doctor expedites examinations and so forth. And so now you are in possession of this new understanding about your situation, and you're confronting your mortality, and you've got, of course, deal with your family. You got a wife and a child, and you had more than one child,
right.
But you got a wife and a little child who's living with you is
right.
What I was trying to convey. You've got grown children, and you've got other family members. So you then decide to chronicle this journey on Facebook.
Well,
when did you decide to do that and why?
When he said it, when my primary physician called and said, you have lymphoma, at that point I looked it up to see what it was. And it's like those, I guess I can be cliche, it's like time stopped. And I was like, okay, I got a life to live. I got kids I want to see, how successful they are. Get married, careers, whatever. I have a child to raise. But it stopped. And I was like, am I going to die from this. And so I spent about 30 minutes, you know, just really thinking about it, you know, crying. Is this
what's going to happen? Oh, you cried?
Yeah, man. Okay. I was like, yeah. You know, because, you know, we grew up in the era cancer was a death sentence. You know, you hear people say you've got cancer. It was like, well, they might prolong your life a little bit, but, you know, you're going to lose 60 pounds, look emaciated, and then you're going to die. I mean, that was the perception. So after about 30 minutes, I was like, no, I'm not going to go out like this. It's not going to happen. I'm not going out like this. If I go out, if it kills me, it's going to have to really put up a fight because I'm not going to let it kill me. I'm going to do whatever I can to combat it. And so then after that, everything else was gravy in the sense that I had already made up my mind that I was going to fight it and to share what that fight looked like.
Now, that's really what I want to hone in on. Why did you make that decision? Why did you feel that was necessary?
Because I looked around and we've been friends with, we've had family members who've had cancer who never talk about it. It was just a big secret. You might find out years later that they might have battled it, might have dealt with it, or died from it. But it wasn't something that was public knowledge. And so I decided not only would I fight it, but I would share what that fight looked like from the doctor's appointments to the chemo to whatever the treatment was.
But what's wrong with, what I'm trying to, and I should also, for context sake, I should also explain that you are a mental health professional.
Yeah.
Why is it that it was important for you not to keep this a secret and to be so transparent?
Because I know a lot of other people are going through it and just not saying it.
Uh-huh. In fact, that's what it is. Yeah.
In fact, when I started sharing, you'd be surprised at the private messages that I got from people who were battling cancer. And I'm not saying one or two. I'm saying there were a whole lot of messages of people who were going through it and basically what they were saying was, thank you for sharing. I'm getting strength from reading about your experience.
I want to linger there a minute. I had a similar experience. This Facebook thing is just, and social media thing is just so fascinating.
Right.
Because for people of our age and our era and older, this sort of public confessional transparency is foreign to us.
Yeah, it is.
And yet some of us have adapted to it very well and others have not so much. But in my case, I actually decided in the light of the Me Too movement to disclose something that I really had only remembered a couple of years ago.
Right.
And that is that I was groped by the janitor at the high school that I attended.
Right.
So I post this.
Right.
On Facebook. And of course, you know, I get tons of responses, but I found it interesting, and I'm now tying this into what you just said, Steve, that I got private messages from several people, one of whom was a student with me at that very high school.
Wow.
Who said, and he said in particular, he said, thank you for sharing. I can't really talk about my situation, but it happened to me too.
Mm-hmm.
He did it to me too.
Mm-hmm.
And he was appreciative of me giving voice to his private pain, even though he still didn't feel that he had the capacity to go any further.
Right.
Another friend did the same thing almost with the same sort of sentiment, like, yeah, this happened to me too. Thank you for sharing. You know, he couldn't really verbalize it.
Right.
I think that's fascinating that people, that all of us are prone to be trapped by secrets and circumstances.
Right.
Cancer wasn't your choice. It wasn't your fault. Me being groped in high school wasn't my choice, wasn't my fault. But yet, you know, people feel trapped. They feel that they can't share.
Right.
They feel shame. They feel guilt. They feel rage and anger. What else do you think is going on as a mental health professional?
Well, I think all those, and some of it is even denial. You know, that, well, did it really happen that way? Maybe I'm misremembering. How can I make my peace with this? You know, all those things, I think. And I think people go in and out of those mindsets. You know, some days they may be really angry and look at how it has impacted their life. And then other days they might be at peace with it. And so those kinds of, I don't want to say human incidents, but things that happen to us that we don't have control over, we have to decide how we're going to incorporate it into our life story, because it's a part of our story. I wanted people to see what I was going through, how I was fighting it, and hopefully maybe they would even get some ideals if they were confronted with the same thing. Well, you can fight it. You don't have to roll over and let it have its way, you know, whatever the outcome. And I think that was important primarily because not everybody who fights cancer wins. Yeah. So, I mean, during my fight, we had friends who died from mm-hmm. cancer.
And you had to be obviously cognizant of the fact that that could have been your story.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely.
In fact, you and I have a college classmate who
right.
who died, Bobby Lane, who right. died of pancreatic cancer.
Right.
He was very public. Also, not to the degree that you were,
yeah.
by not even close, but he was public on Facebook
right.
with his... I mean, I literally grew up with Bobby in Chicago. I mean, I remember Bobby as young as like fourth or fifth grade or something.
Right, right.
So facing that reality, understanding that just as Bobby and others died in the throes of this battle, that could happen to you, did that shape your approach to engagement with us on Facebook in any way?
No, it didn't. My engagement on Facebook, beside it being sort of a diary or, you know, chronicling, you know, I mixed basic fact, you know, had a doctor's appointment, da-da-da, whatever, that's the fact, you know, they gave me this medicine, da-da, and this is what it's supposed to do, with how I was feeling about what was going on. And along with that, where I saw myself, you know, in the future. And I think that's the thing about cancer that's kind of crazy. You know, we always, you know, we were raised in a culture where you don't really, you know, tomorrow's not promised you and so forth and so on. But with cancer, it's almost like you have to plan for tomorrow and the week after tomorrow, as well as live each day to its fullest. If that makes sense. So you're living like a dual existence. You're living for the future, but you're living now. And I wanted people to know that you could do that. And there's nothing blasphemous or wrong about doing that, because you're in a battle for your life every day. And so I think one post I said, got up this morning and sat down, and death was right across the table. And I'm looking at death saying, not today. It's not going to happen today.
What did that mean? Because that's very metaphorical. What did that mean?
It meant that at any point in time, you can succumb to the experience and just give up. Because we're talking about, I had three rounds of chemo because the first round, which should have knocked everything out, didn't knock everything out. There was still some left over. So I had to have a second round. And the protocol is you have a second round in anticipation for stem cell transplant. So you have a second round to shrink what's still there even more, so try to kill it. And then with your stem cell, I don't know if you're familiar with the stem cell process, but what they do is They harvest, they give you a shot. You have to take a shot for a week, a shot every day for a week, that basically stimulates your body, your bone marrow, to pop out these stem cells so they can harvest them. So they harvest them, your own stem cells, put them on ice or freeze them. Then they give you another week of chemo that totally wipes out your immune system. When I say totally, there was one medicine, Dave, that they gave me, one infusion. It only took 30 minutes. But in that 30 minutes, I had to, part of the process was I had to eat ice and popsicles or whatever, because they wanted the blood vessels in my mouth and my head to be constricted so the medicine didn't go there. So they wanted it to stay, you know, below my neck. And so imagine you're taking in something that's supposed to kill something inside of you, and yet you're supposed to live. And so that was the paradox that you're going through. And that's why a lot of people don't make it, because if you have any other health problems, then it limits how aggressively they can treat what you have. And if you have other health problems, the process can kill you.
So you are sitting here in front of me today looking, I would say, the epitome of good health. You know, you're not a small guy. You're a big guy, muscular. You look fine. You feel fine?
Yeah. Other than the fatigue. And that was the eye-opening thing for me, because when I, that first meeting with the oncologist, I said, well, how much weight am I going to lose? So forth and so on. He said, well, you probably won't lose any weight. In fact, you might gain some. He said, and we want you to stay, you know, as far as possible, eat, you know, don't try to lose weight or anything like that, because they knew down the line what, you know, if things didn't resolve like they wanted, what the next steps were. So if you didn't know, if it didn't tell you, you would have never known.
Right. Yeah.
Through the whole thing.
Yeah.
You would have never known, because I didn't lose any weight.
Mm-hmm.
I my weight stayed about the same. In fact, when I went in the hospital for the stem cell stuff, I gained almost 10 pounds or so. A lot of it was water weight, because I was constantly hooked, you know, to an IV, but you wouldn't have known. So and there was no other health problems there. And so that was in my favor. I wasn't 60, because most people who are diagnosed with lymphoma are over 60, and they also have some additional health problems.
Okay.
Then limits how, you know, the mortality rate is high because you've got all these other issues going on.
Sure. So you aside from fatigue, you're feeling good. What's your current diagnosis?
Well, currently I'm in remission, total remission. One of my friends.
And that means no indications at all of the cancer being present?
It means that there's no activity in those areas where the cancer was found right now. That's what that means. I would like to say there's no cancer in my body, but I can't say that. Because even though those masses shrunk, and you have to understand lymphoma is more of a cancer of the blood, so it can be anywhere. You know, that's why they were looking to see exactly where it was, make sure it hadn't gone to my brain or whatever. So all the places that were hot spots, as it were, are not active right now. So that's the best, I guess, the best I can hope for right now.
And there will be a point where, at least from what I understand from others who have survived cancer, that if you reach a certain point,
5 years,
okay, you'll be cancer free. They'll proclaim you cancer free.
Right.
And so you've been in remission for how long?
Total remission was this past March. Well, I had a PET scan at the end of 2017. When he looked at that, he guardedly said, "You're in remission." But then officially, I had another one in March, and in March he said, "Yes, you're in total remission."
Okay, so you're about roughly almost 8 months into remission.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You continue to update us on how you're feeling and what you're doing on Facebook, and it does seem to me that you've weathered this storm very well. You and your wife and your youngest child have made a transition from the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest, now to Southeast. You're in Georgia, so you're back in the South. You are moving on with your life. You're moving forward with your life.
Yes and no. Yes, I'm moving forward, and with the realization, it's almost like what is that Greek story with the sword that's always hanging over your head?
Oh, Damocles.
Yes, yeah, that's kind of how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're there, but every cough, every ache, every weird symptom, I'm like, is it back? Is this a precursor to, you know what I'm saying? And so you're living, but you're not trying. You're doing your best to not anticipate or think that it's cancer returning, yet that's the life that you live now. You see it through that lens. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And there are reminders. I have neuropathy in my hands and my feet. And that's neuropathy is...
It's painful tingling, right?
It's tingling.
Yeah.
So it tingles all the time. And of course, it gets worse at night. You see my scars on my arms.
Your forearms, yeah.
Where, you know, the veins couldn't take it. So, you know, they had to put a port in, and I have a scar on my chest where the port was. So they're little reminders. And I had a friend who said, "You'll beat it, but you won't be unscathed." And that's kind of how you have reminders of scars that are there. And then periodically, there are things that trigger the memories of the experience. I went to visit my oldest daughter at her place of employment. She works in a hospital. And she said, "Here, Dad, you know, you can wait in the waiting room while I, you know, finish up whatever." And the furniture in the waiting room was the same furniture that was in the clinic where I had to get blood drawn and infusions. And I was like, taken back. So I was like, hospitals, do they use the same interior decorator? or what is this? You know? So that was kind of wild. So you get little things like, you know, things that will remind you of
sure.
the experience. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the piece.
Well, look, man, I want to thank you for sharing your journey with us here on the Healthy Alabama podcast, but also more importantly, for having the foresight and the courage and the insight to share your journey on Facebook.
Right.
I think your premise is exactly right, that we do more damage by keeping secrets than by being transparent. We damage ourselves and we deprive others of the opportunity to gain insight and inspiration.
I agree. Exactly.
So thank you for that. And man, it's good to have it's emotional when you learn that somebody that you've known for 30 or 40 years is facing something like this. So I can't even begin to tell you just, and I'm speaking very selfishly now as I end the podcast, I can't even begin to tell you how happy I am to just see you and to see you in good health. Stephen Claiborne, my longtime friend, college friend, mental health counselor. I think I'm going to go ahead and just speak it into existence. Cancer survivor.
Right.
And I think we have to add to your resume, as I did earlier, social media activist. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it was a pleasure, man. On the Healthy Alabama podcast. The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, which is a project of AIDS Alabama. And you can go to their website to get more information on the good work that our friends at AIDS Alabama are doing across the state of this great state of ours. The program is produced by me, David Person, your host, and we produce it in partnership, or I produce it in partnership with our friends here at WJOU, Praise 90.1 FM, here in Huntsville, Alabama, Oakwood University Radio on the beautiful Oakwood University campus. My theme music was produced by DJ Bailey in the house doing his thing. All right, until next time, be healthy.